during Lowe's Pro Savings Days. Save more on the brands you trust to deliver on the job. Right now, get a free DeWalt 20-volt max 8-amp-hour battery when you buy a DeWalt 10-inch 20-volt max dual bevel compound miter saw. Plus, get up to 35% off select major appliances. Save even more on what you need to keep the job moving. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 7/31 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever?
Cabin crew.
Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boost and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
This is Kid in a Cage.
Florida versus Timothy Ferriter.
A father accused of locking his adopted son inside a cage. Join us as we hear the facts behind these charges
through live courtroom audio from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
All right, court is back in session. The Honorable Judge Howard Coates presiding.
All right, everyone may be seated. All right, so if both sides looked at the revised 3.4, the lesser included 8.9 for culpable negligence in the revised verdict form.
Yes.
Are all sides in agreement with the form of these documents?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, you may go ahead and bring the jury out then. So what I'm going to do is have them leave their jury instructions, and I want new sets printed for each of the jurors that go back. Oh, you've already done that, so that's done. Everything's been replaced. Okay, all right, good enough. All right, we're set then.
Jury entering.
All rise. All right, everyone may be seated. All right, so I'm going to ask each of the jurors to turn to the instruction for 3.4. That has been modified slightly to add an additional lesser included. And I'm only going to read the part that I did not read previously because it wasn't in the draft that I had. So bear with me as I read the edited version of 3.4. The lesser crime indicated in the definition of neglect of a child is culpable negligence, which brings me to adding an additional instruction for culpable negligence, which is 8.9. To prove the crime of culpable negligence, the state must prove the following two elements beyond a reasonable doubt. One, Timothy Dunn Ferriter exposed RTF to personal injury, and two, he did so through culpable negligence. Actual injury is not required. I will now define culpable negligence for you. Each of us has a duty to act reasonably toward others. If there is a violation of that duty without any conscious intention to harm, that violation is negligence. But culpable negligence is more than a failure to use ordinary care for others. In order for negligence to be culpable, it must be gross and flagrant. Culpable negligence is a course of conduct showing reckless disregard for human life or for the safety of persons exposed to its dangerous effects, or such an entire want of care as to raise a presumption of a conscious indifference to consequences, or which shows wantonness or recklessness, or a grossly careless disregard for the safety and welfare of the public, or shows an indifference to the rights of others as is equivalent to an intentional violation of such rights. I'm also going to have you turn to the verdict form, because there's a revision to that from what I previously explained. Again, I'm only going to go over the portion of the verdict form that has been edited since I last explained it to you. So when you go to the verdict form, I ask you to go to the portion that deals with count three. As you recall, the original had guilty of neglect of a child and not guilty. Well, there is a lesser included for count three that you will also need to consider if you, in your unanimous determination, determine that the defendant is, there's not enough evidence to provide for a determination of guilt as to the higher charge. You then will be asked to consider whether there's enough evidence for consideration of guilty of culpable negligence, which is a lesser included offense. And as before, if you find that there's not a basis in your collective determination to check either of the first two boxes, you'll then go to consideration of the third box for not guilty. And again, as with all of the counts, you're to check only the box that represents the appropriate collective unanimous determination of the jury, and only one box per count. Okay, so that concludes that. So now the attorneys will have an opportunity to present their final arguments. Please remember that what the attorneys say is not evidence or your instructions on the law. However, I do ask that you listen closely to their arguments, because they are intended to aid and help you in an understanding of the case. Each side will have an equal time, but the state is entitled to divide this time between an opening argument and a rebuttal argument after the defense has given its closing argument. So that concludes my reading of the instructions to you on the law. With that, is the state ready to proceed with its closing arguments?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, Ms. Coakley, you may proceed.
I want to start by thanking you all for your time and attention. I know this process has been a longer one than any of us estimated, and at times, a lot of the time, it can be tedious. But this process is an important one, and the decision you're about to make is an important one. From the outside, the Ferreter family looked in a lot of ways like an ordinary family. Two parents, four children. The kids go to school, there are activities, the daughters have bedrooms. Normal, ordinary, to the outside. But what has been established, what has been proven through the course of this case, is what was happening inside that house was anything but ordinary. We learned that... over the course of the time that Ronan Ferreter was in Jupiter, Florida in December 2021 through January 2022, he was subjected to treatment by his parents, including his father, Timothy Ferreter, that was cruel, heinous, and malicious. That under or behind the facade of an ordinary family, there was the treatment and isolation, the systematic isolation and confinement of Ronan Ferreter when he was 14 years old, in that room, in their garage. And that's why we're here today, because this treatment, this systemic way in which he was forced to live, is a crime. Now I want to talk specifically about the law in the case, and you just got it from the judge, but I want to talk for a few moments about some of the specifics and explain it. You heard that your job, the rules for your deliberation in this case, your duty is to determine whether or not the defendant has been proven guilty or not. It is not your job to make a determination if he is found guilty, what, if anything, the punishment should be. That role is left to the judge. And so that means that everyone in this room has a very specific job. The state has a job, the defense has a job, and the judge has a job. And you, as a jury, are here to answer the specific question, did the state prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt? And in answering that question, the law tells us that your verdict cannot be influenced by feelings of prejudice, bias, or sympathy. So if you're back there and you feel that, you know, I feel bad for the victim or I feel bad for the situation that the defendant is, that is not something that can influence your verdict. Now, in applying the verdict, there are three questions or three crimes at issue here. I want to take a moment to kind of talk about each one of them. I'm going to go backwards, count three, and then count two, and then count one. So count three in this case is child neglect. And basically, there are three elements that the state has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. Elements two and three are not really in dispute in this case. The child in this case was under the age of 18 years old. He was a child. You heard that during the time period that's at issue here, he was 14 years old. And the defendant was his father. And in Florida, a person that is a father is a caregiver. So two and three are not really at issue. Now, to prove element one, we have to show that he willfully or by culpable negligence failed or omitted to provide Roman with the care, supervision, and services necessary to maintain his physical and mental health. And we're going to go in detail, again, as we've done throughout the entirety of this case, about what the evidence, about how it shows, how it proves that there was neglect. But you heard from Ronan and also from the expert witnesses in this case that they did not try to address any existing mental health issues from at least 2019 was the last time any of those were addressed by a professional. And instead, what they did was systematically isolate him and provide no treatment and have him live in a way that the experts told you would be neglectful and detrimental and abusive to any child. Now, count two is false imprisonment. And to prove that, we have to show that the defendant forcibly, secretly, or by threat confined or restrained RF against his will. And so, confined, imprisoned, or restrained. Here we have direct evidence of that. You can hear over and over and over again. We went through every single day that we have on video. In the room and lock the door. The second element is that he had no lawful authority to do so. There is no lawful authority. There is no right in order to confine a child like this. That's talking about like if you're a police officer. Did you have the lawful authority to arrest someone and put them in jail? That would mean we wouldn't be able to prove that. But the defendant in this case has no lawful authority to do that in the manner that he did. And we have to prove that it was against Ronan's will. And we had his direct testimony as to that. Now, I want to talk about count one, which is the aggravated child abuse. There are two elements to aggravated child abuse. The first is that he willfully tortured, maliciously punished, or willfully and unlawfully caged RF. And it's important to note here that these are ors. So it's in the alternative. It doesn't have to be all of those. It can be any one of the three. So if you find that we've proven beyond a reasonable doubt that he willfully tortured, then we've met element one. Or instead, if you find, based on the testimony of Dr. Myers, that it's actually malicious punishment, then that is proving count one, element one. Or if you find that based on the circumstances and where he was kept, locked in that room day after day, that that's willfully and intentionally caging, that's enough. And then we have to prove that he was under the age of 18, which there isn't much dispute here because he was 14. Now, the courts or the law gives us a definition of what malicious means, and that applies to one of those alternatives, which is malicious punishment. And that means that he wrongfully, intentionally, and without legal justification or excuse, it may be established by the circumstances. So in jury selection, in opening statement, there was a lot of discussion about how do you know someone's intent. The law is that you can look to the circumstances. You can make reasonable inferences from the evidence. And it's from the circumstances from which one can conclude that a reasonable parent would not have engaged in these damaging acts towards a child for any valid reason, and that the primary purpose of the acts was to cause unjustifiable pain or injury. Now, you also got an instruction as to reasonable punishment. And in Florida, you can find the defendant guilty if you prove that we have proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant was not a parent, which is not the case here, or if we proven that the defendant's physical discipline of RF was not reasonable for misbehavior under the circumstances, not reasonable. If you find that it was not reasonable, you have to find him guilty. So I want to talk for a second about how this instruction applies to aggravated child abuse. This instruction is talking about corporal punishment, right? And we talked in jury selection about spanking a child or not spanking a child. There are circumstances in Florida where it is permissible to use corporal punishment against a child, but that has to be reasonable corporal punishment. So an example would be spanking a child.
Overruled.
Right? And so when we're evaluating whether or not this applies, about whether or not something meets the definition of reasonable corporal punishment, we look, one, is it reasonable? And two, is it actually corporal physical punishment, which is not the case here. Here we have intentional caging of a child, which is not corporal punishment under the circumstances. Now, you also got an instruction about lesser included crimes. And so the law is that sometimes there are crimes and then there's a lesser included crime under it. And when evaluating a lesser included crime, you start at the top. And you make a determination first, did we prove the top crime? In that case, it would be aggravated child abuse. If you found that we have proven that crime beyond a reasonable doubt, you don't need to go and look at the lesser included offenses. The same is true for child neglect, and a lesser included crime is culpable negligence. I want to talk about kind of what the lesser is really quickly on each one. The lesser included crime is child neglect, is culpable negligence. For that, you just have to find that the defendant exposed RF to personal injury, and he did so through culpable negligence. The reason why this isn't really appropriate is it's subsumed in child neglect, and this doesn't take into consideration the fact that there's a parent-child relationship here, and that the person that the action is toward is a child. This could be any adult action towards another adult. Now, as for child abuse, which is the lesser of aggravated child abuse, there has to be an intentional infliction of mental injury or that the person committed an intentional act that could reasonably be expected to result in mental injury. So again, when we're talking about intent, how does the state prove intent? You don't have to prove, or we don't have to prove, the thoughts in someone's head. That would be impossible. But we have to prove that there was an intentional act. So this defendant made actions with intention, meaning it's not an accident. He didn't accidentally build the room in his garage. He didn't accidentally lock his child in day after day. He didn't accidentally make it so he didn't have a bathroom. That's what the types of intent mean under the law. Don't make me do it.
Well, only when you move away from the mic.
The whole time.
That's why I said give her the mic.
So, and that is what the instruction of child abuse means. So, what you have heard from the judge and what is clear is what is not an element of a crime. What is not something that we have to prove in order for you to find the defendant guilty. We do not have to prove that every minute of the day the defendant abused his son. We do not have to prove that he was subjected to that abuse at every second of the day. It can be still child abuse when there are times where you are kind and treat your child appropriately, and then other times abuse the child, which is what is happening here. We do not have to prove to you that his confinement was 24/7. There's been a lot of discussion about, well, there were times where he was let out. Absolutely. The state agrees. Ronan agrees. His sister Fiona agrees. That has always been what they have said, what they have discussed about what happened to him. It's not every moment of the day. There are lots of times where they look like an ordinary family. It's what happens behind the closed doors, which is why we're here. We do not also have to prove that the victim was starving. that he was malnourished. That has never been our contention or the state's claim. We agree that he was not clinically malnourished. The issue with the food is that they systematically controlled and regulated him to an extent where it became abusive. There was social isolation. There was lack of access. There was lack of autonomy to a level in which it was objectively harmful to any person, but specifically to Ronan. That's why the food matters. Yes, he got dinner. He got breakfast most days. You can see on the video there's one or two days that as a punishment, he does not get dinner. But we sat here and watched him over and over and over again eating meals alone in his room. It also is not a legal defense that a child has some type of diagnosis, a mental health issue, a substance abuse issue, a behavioral problem. You know, whether or not a child is born with a mental health issue or an intellectual disability or a behavioral problem or an adopted child has those things because of trauma, because of genetics, because of a roll of the dice, that could happen in any case, adopted or biological. That is not a reason or a justification to abuse a child. And that's what the law is. And that's why you're not going to see that in an instruction that it matters at all. It is also not a legal defense that a child has behavioral problems. It's not a legal defense that it was hard, it was difficult, it wasn't as easy as the other children. It's not a legal defense that we tried other things. There's no justification, legal, for what happened here. It's also not a legal defense that we did not get good advice. Now, you're going to get the form of the verdict. There's actually three counts, but I just showed two here. And I want to make clear that you make a determination, you just check one of these, but your determination on one charge can be different. So that means that you can find him guilty of one charge and not guilty for another. The evidence applies to all of the charges, but your determination doesn't have to matter. And some people get worried that it's going to be like on TV and the foreperson's going to have to read it out. That's not how it works in here. The clerk will read it. And this is the kind of the instruction that tells you that law that I just talked about, that a finding of guilty or not guilty as to one crime doesn't have to affect your verdict as to the other. Now, there is one instruction here that we haven't talked about a lot at all, and it's called the principal instruction. And you probably noticed that we have presented evidence of both actions and statements made by Timothy Ferriter and also actions and statements that were done by Tracy Ferriter. And that's because although they're being tried separately, they're both charged. And so that means in cases like that, if the defendant helped another person or persons commit or attempt to commit a crime, the defendant is a principal and must be treated as if he had done all the things the other person did. So they're co-defendants and can be jointly responsible for that action. So you don't have to, in your deliberations, make a separation between who did what. They are acting together in this criminal acts. Now let's talk specifically about the evidence that has been presented. First, you had the testimony of R.F. Ronan. And he testified, and one of the first things that he told you and that I asked him about is how he felt about the treatment by his parents. And he told you that he found that treatment to be dehumanizing. He did not want to live in that structure in the garage, and that the defendant forced him against his will. I asked him, well, what would have happened if you refused to go in the room? And he told you that he would have been physically forced to enter that room. He would have been dragged against his will. He also told you that although he did not spend all time in that room, he did spend large portions of his day confined in that room. He told you that every single night he would be locked into the room without access to a bathroom, that there were large portions of the day where he would be locked in. Occasionally, a time or two, he would return from school, be put in, and be not let out until the next day. He would eat many of his meals alone in the room, and there was periods, more than once, where he was in the dark during the day. And, you know, on cross-examination, Ronan also told you that, yes, it's true, he can remember the good times because their abuse of him wasn't absolute. But what their actions taught him, they taught him that his needs, personal, social, physical, did not matter. They taught him, they reinforced that he was bad and that the cruel and inhumane treatment is what he deserved. They taught him that it was his fault, that he deserved this treatment. And we can still see the impact of those lessons on Ronan today. It was apparent when he testified that those lessons, what the defendant's treatment did to him, are still there. And we see that those lessons haven't faded. And we could see that in some of the statements that he made. You could see that despite cruel, inhumane, systemically bad, harmful treatment, despite that, those people, the defendant, are still the only parents that he's ever known, that he still wants to please them.
Objection, facts, non-evidence, and proper argument.
Overruled.
For a child, and you heard it from both Dr. Myers and Dr. Rappa, for a child, this type of behavior can be normalized. It's complex. It's confusing to have the people, the only people in the world that you are supposed to love and trust, to systemically treat you this way. And so for him, for Ronan today, as a 16-year-old, still a child, he needs to call it a mistake and say that they should be forgiven. But that's not what the law is. The law, when we look, we see that this was a systemic, harmful, cruel action by those people that he loved and he trusted. And under the law, it's something that's called child abuse. Now, in evaluating the testimony, we also have the testimony of Ronan's older sister, Fiona, who is now 17 years old. And so when this was happening, she's about 15, 16 years old for the time in Florida. And in that white box is one of the instructions you got, and it's about evaluating the credibility of witnesses. And in evaluating the credibility, one of the things that we look at is, does the witness's testimony agree with the other testimony and other evidence in the case?
Ms. Coakley, carry the mic.
I never wanted to be like a pop star, and that's how this makes me feel. Does the witness's testimony agree with the other testimony and evidence in the case? Fiona confirms, yes, he was locked in the garage. She confirms the status of the room. She says that he had no other room in the house. She also says that the defendant is confined to that room for large portions of time in Florida, and that he is punished differently than his sister for the same action. She tells us that she was allowed to go to the bathroom. She had a room. She had access. And so did her sister Nola and even the baby Pierce. She tells us that at no point did she ever feel that there was any need for her to be protected from her brother, that she was never in fear for him, and that he never physically harmed her. There's one incident she can tell us about where he stole from her in Arizona. The defendant's actions towards the victim were normalized in the family. And I know that Fiona was really hard to hear because we did her through closed circuit. But as the judge told you, if it would help in your deliberations, you can re-listen to her testimony and you can listen to the audio, not from this courtroom, but from the courtroom we were actually in. But there, at the end, on that second day, we talked about, did it just, because this action, because this treatment was happening so often, did it become normal? And she said it was. And she said that at the time, I didn't have a name for what was happening to him, but I do now. And it was abuse. And then we have the testimony of Dr. Myers, who's an expert witness, a child psychiatrist who is still actively treating patients and a professor at Brown University. And he told us that based on his review, that the defendant's actions were malicious, cruel, and sadistic, that they constitute torture, that there was no legitimate justification for this ever, and the only reason that you do this is to harm someone. He told us that that treatment of Ronan resulted in psychological harm. He told us that it was emotional deprivation, psychological deprivation, and a physical deprivation. And that leads to a psychological impact. It, in those cases, a child, it leads to a child that is withdrawn, isolated, depressed. It can lead to suicidal ideation. It can cause existing behaviors to deteriorate. So if you take a child that maybe has some pre-existing trauma, that has behavioral issues, it absolutely under no circumstances will correct or treat any of them. It will only make it worse. He told us that it will stunt psychological and intellectual growth of a child. He told us, and we just had a lot of discussions about reactive attachment disorder and whether or not that is appropriate here. He told us that there are indications that there may be an attachment issue, but that the defendant's actions would increase and exacerbate any attachment issues. That this is the worst thing that you can do for a child for attachment issues. He also talked about post-traumatic stress disorder and told us that the defendant's treatment alone is a traumatic event that can be a precursor to post-traumatic stress disorder. And that's what he thinks is happening in this case, because he agrees that there is PTSD apparent here in Ronan. He told us that even if they're not the original cause, they're not the chicken, they're not the egg, that it would make any symptoms worse. And there's been a lot of discussion about diagnoses and what it is and what caused it. I want to be clear, that does not matter what diagnosis there is or is appropriate or correct. It is not a legal defense. If a child has reactive attachment disorder, it doesn't mean you get to treat them however you want. What matters here is that there is an indication that the child may have been medically vulnerable because of past trauma, and instead of doing anything productive to assist that child, they did the worst possible thing you could do. Now, beyond the direct testimony, the photographs in this case, we have hours of Ring camera because the defendant recorded every single moment in that room. And like we said, it's not a continuous stream. It's 1-minute videos related to action. But we have hours of the treatment, of the confinement to prove, to corroborate what Ronan said, that he was in there alone.
You want to take this thing to the next level? Let's do it. Let's do it in 4-2. Let's do it in 4-2. Let's go.
And so you don't have to take Ronan's word for it, that the treatment was extreme, that it was dehumanizing. We have the direct evidence of his actions. This is not a concerned father trying to make a reasonable correction to a behavioral issue. This is a man that is angry. This is a man that has actual malice, that has physical aggression and anger, because we see him put his hands on him, throw him on the bed, put his hands on his neck, scream on him, and then turn out the lights. And so his son is in an 8x8 box. The area that you're sitting in is bigger than that. Oh.
Sustain.
You can use your common sense for how big 8 feet is. Alone. And remember, we're looking through a camera that is has some night vision capabilities. Ronan told us what it's like to be in there, that when the lights are off, there is no ambient light. There is no window, that he's sitting in the pitch dark. So let's talk about the application of the evidence to the law. Aggravated child abuse. Malicious means wrongfully, intentionally, and without legal justification. What's in establishing or evaluating what is reasonable punishment? Is it corporal punishment? things that are generally accepted as being a corporal punishment, a strike on the hand, hitting a child on the back of their behind in a direct response as a punishment, reasonable corporal punishment. Reasonable punishment does not subject a child to a risk of harm, and it does not cause actual harm, like the case here. It is not humiliating, dehumanizing, and cruel. It is proportional, and it is limited in duration. So let's talk about the duration here. Continuous. This is ongoing, and I think that's an important delineation here, right? This is not a proportional reaction to a behavior, like a discipline or a punishment. He has no other room in the house. There is no other place for him. Every other space is taken up. The parents have a room. Each of his daughters have a room. Pierce has the office. So there is no situation where he conforms his behavior to whatever standards the defendant wants, and then he is out of the structure in the garage. This is his life, continuous, even in the best case scenario. But we know that it was more insidious than that, because we look at the duration. January 6th, he goes in at 8:10 p.m. That's when they lock up the door for the final time. No more bathroom, no more glasses of water, certainly no snacks. The door's not open until 7:10 in the morning. He's in there for 11 hours overnight. January 8th, he goes in at 9:39 p.m. January 9th, the door is not open again until 8:35 in the morning, 11 hours. January 9th, 8:36 to 7:39. January 10th, 8:36 p.m. until 8:25 a.m., 12 hours. No bathroom, not a drink, not a chance of getting a snack. No way to escape if there is an emergency or a fire. Locked, deadbolted inside. When we look at January 13th, 4:49 p.m. to 6:18 in the morning, 13 hours on a regular basis. And the exhibit that the state showed you, all of the Ring videos are in from that entire time period. But then we showed you hours of videos that showed every event. So him going in, and then when they come in again, he gets out. So those are the major blocks, the major events. When they come in, they go in, they out. And those are the numbers that we're talking about. When we look at the total in the day, okay, fine, not just overnight. How much of a 24-hour day is he in the room? On January 10th, he goes to the bathroom between 7:39 and 7:45 a.m., or 7:43, so that's when he's let out. He leaves the room at 9:05. He told us he got left around 9 to go to school. And then he returns to the room at 4:59, so after school. And then he leaves the room to go to the bathroom at 5:56 to 6:18 p.m., and then he's in for the rest of the night. So the total, if we go 12 a.m. to 12 p.m., is 14 hours and 22 minutes of a 24-hour day, and he went to school. Huge portions of this child's life are alone in this room. On January 13th, same thing. He goes out for 2 minutes to go to the bathroom at 7 o'clock in the morning, almost 8. He leaves the room to go to school at 9 o'clock. Back in the room at 4:49. He gets dinner at 7:02 and lights off at 7:26. He's in there for 16 hours, if we're going from 12 a.m. to 12 p.m., and he went to school. January 20th, same thing, 6:43 to 6:45, leaves the room at 9, back in at 4:45, this time without the lights on. Dinner at 7 p.m. Now, was this every single day? No, because if we look at January 23rd, he gets unlocked, he gets released from the cell his father made for him at 9:07 a.m., and he's not back until 7:10 a.m. So yeah, he's out for most of the day this one day. That doesn't change this, though, the psychological impact. And when we look at the proportionality, it's important to remember that the time frame that we are talking about is the crimes that occurred in Florida. And so that is from December 2021 until January of 2022. You can see the things that he is getting in trouble for on that video. He's getting in trouble for stealing candy on that very first night. You stole chocolate from us, his mom says. Having an iPod in his room. Having a bad attitude. Lying. He tells a story about having a mock trial, and that wasn't true. Dr. Myers told us that kids subjected to this type of condition can have a fantasy life because they have nothing else going on, and so they have to have like a myth of themselves. Those are the things in Florida that he is being subjected to this type of treatment for. And I want to talk a little bit about intent, because there was a lot of discussion from the defense about intent. How do we determine someone's intent? For aggravated child abuse, it has to be that they maliciously punished, willfully tortured, or willfully caged. Those are intentional actions. We have to prove that the actions that they took were intentional, that he intentionally and purposely put him in that room, in that structure.
Objection, misstatement of the law.
Overruled.
That it wasn't an accident. That's the intent. That he willfully tortured. That he maliciously punished. Not every idea that was in his head. So how do we determine, as a jury, intent? We look to the evidence. You can make reasonable inferences from the evidence, and we look to his actions and then the things that he said in those circumstances. So let's look at the defendant's actions. That he did not give the victim a room in the house. He hired a contractor specifically to build this. He specified no windows, 8x8, lights controlled from the outside, lock, and a deadbolt from the outside. No bathroom. And he put that bucket in there. Each one of those steps are intentional, specific, deliberate acts. It's not an accident that this happened like this. We know exactly what he intended to do to his son. He set up the room. He put the camera in there. And then he forced the child to use a bucket. This is a screenshot from January 19th at 6:46 a.m., where he has to use the bucket. He had been in the room since 9:12 p.m. the night before. And this happened again and again. And in the morning, on one of the videos, you can hear the defendant tell him to take out the bucket and say, your neighbors don't need to see your piss bucket. From the outside, everything looked okay, but what was happening inside that room was abuse. We see that the defendant's repeated actions to socially and physically isolate the child. Over and over and over again, for hours last week, we watched Ronan alone in his room eating. And Dr. Myers told you about the impact of that type of social and physical isolation. His actions to take away every little step and bit of autonomy that he had, that he had no control over the temperature even in the room.
Okay. Did you turn the air on in your room?
Yes.
You're supposed to touch that.
Did you hear Baba?
Yes.
Did you hear his question?
No.
Are you supposed to touch air conditioning?
No.
Why did you touch it?
It was getting hot.
I don't give a shit if it's getting hot. You're a tough guy. You don't touch the air conditioning. I'll deal with you tomorrow on that.
You know, an opening statement, defense counsel said that there was just a design flaw in the room. It's not a flaw. These are intentional choices. This is what he wanted to happen. This is what the environment that he intentionally subjected his son to. An environment that no reasonable person would think was appropriate or acceptable. And then after they have that conversation, both parents come in and ransack the room again and leave him with even less stuff sitting in the room. We have the defendant's actions, his choice that not only would he substantially socially and physically isolate his son, but that he had to subject him to hours of sitting in the dark.
Oh, you're so tough. You're gonna say yeah? You're gonna hold it out? Yeah, bad attitude. Tough guy. What's this here?
What we have here is anger and derision. We have spite, and we want to cause him harm. That's why you're not trying to address behavior. What you're trying to do is maliciously punish him and make him sit in a dark cell for hours during the day. When we look at, oops, I have one more. This one. This is a few minutes later.
So we got my answer?
Yeah.
Oh, you're so tough. You're going to say yeah? You're going to hold it out? Yeah, bad attitude. Tough guy. Tough guy. What's this here? Bad answer?
Of the punishment, like, look what he's doing that for there. He has a bad attitude. His 14-year-old son has a bad attitude, and that's why he gets to be locked in a room with no lights, which to talk to Dr. Myers told us is the same as solitary confinement, something that is universally condemned for most humans, but certainly for children, because of the psychological harm that that type of treatment caused. And we can see about how often that type of thing is happening. The camera is installed in the room on January 5th. That's the very first video we watched. And we went through each of these. We see that on January 9th at 8:36 p.m., they're mad at him, he's in the dark. No ambient light, a 4x4 room. On January 10th at 6:18 to 7:06, again, dark. On January 11th, 4:45 to 8 o'clock at night, and he doesn't get dinner that night because they're mad.
Ms. Coakley, pull the mic up because it's a recording issue for you.
Because they're mad. No dinner. On January 13th, again, 4:49 to 7:02, 2.5 hours in the dark in the middle of the day. And then they come in, and at 7:55 again for the rest of the night, pitch dark. No ambient light. Not a window. 8x8. On January 14th, again, 4:49 to 7:02, he is sitting alone in the dark. Like Dr. Meyer said, systemic, ongoing psychological torture of a child. January 15th, 5:04 to 7:32, 2.5 hours more in the dark. On January 19th, 7:45 p.m., those lights get switched off again. On January 20th, 4:45 to 5:51. January 24th at 7:08 p.m., he's in the dark. And then January 28th is the last day. It's the day that he runs away. The defendant made deliberate, intentional actions. He put his child, a child that he knew was vulnerable because of his early childhood experiences, into this circumstance. Every single night, for periods of time during the day, he locked the door over and over and over again and didn't allow him to even control the temperature. His only option was to use the bathroom in a bucket, and he had no access to water on multiple occasions. And then, in evaluating his intent about what he is trying to do in this circumstances, we have what he says.
Can I tell me something? Can I tell me something? Don't tell me what. This is your one chance. Don't look at me like an asshole. You want to tell me something or not? Yeah, from where?
Blue van.
Where?
Green van.
Excuse
me? Green van.
Stealing again?
What the fuck,
really?
What the fuck is wrong with you?
You're stealing,
so fucking
like,
disappointing.
Chocolate, and then you got so much stuff in your room.
You're fucking great. You're just such a disappointment. You're gonna lose. I'm gonna take you out of that school, and you're gonna be in this room.
He's gonna be.
You're this close.
Derision. That's what's governing his decisions. And that's why we know that it's an intentional act.
Stand up. Why are you giving people shit attitude? Fuck that. Don't say I don't know. Why do you give a shit attitude?
I'm not thinking.
Fuck that. Why do you give a shit attitude? Answer me. Before I get really fucking pissed off, answer me. Why give her a shit attitude? We're in your school today talking to your people to give you a better opportunity. You got a fucking shit attitude?
And after this, when he exits the room, he again turns off the light and leaves him locked in the room. And so how does that impact our ability to determine or make a conclusion about what his intent is? This isn't about getting a productive response or even having a proportional type of conversation. This exchange is about him having a bad attitude. And you can see even here, Ronan tries to say, I'm not thinking. That's why I'm having a bad attitude. And there is anger, aggression, physical, the specter of physical force, as opposed to having any kind of conversation with the child. And then the response is to not have a conversation with them, not try to do anything that would be useful. Instead, locks him in the dark in an empty cell and puts him, turns the lights off. Because he's mad. He has malice towards the child. Now, I want to talk for a second about Arizona. Because I know that maybe it can be a little bit confusing. We've had a lot of conversation about things that happened in Arizona and what happened in Florida. The defendant is charged with the conduct that occurred in Florida. And the judge has given you an instruction about how to weigh that conduct and how that can impact your deliberations. And that instruction is that the evidence of those other crimes, wrongs, or acts can be considered for the purpose of proving motive, opportunity, intent, preparation, plan, knowledge, identity, or the absence or mistake of accident. So that means that when considering the defendant's intent here, you can take into consideration his actions in Florida. You can take into consideration that this is not just something that he suddenly came to in Florida, that it just happened for 30 days. You can take into consideration that this is something that the defendant had been subjecting his son to for a period of 3 years. With, as Dr. Rapper told you, really no improvement, right? Like he was still having the issues that the defendant was concerned about, the bad attitude. Stealing the sprinkles. And so, despite the fact that it was not helpful, that it was harmful, he continued to do it. It's an intentional act that he continued to lock his structure, that it's his child in that structure, that there was a bucket, that there was no control over the lights or temperatures, that he used physical and social isolation. That this is not just something, oh, let me give it a try. This is something that he had been subjecting his child to for years. And you can take that into consideration when determining his intent here. That this was his plan. That he wanted to do this. That it was not a mistake. You can also take into consideration the physical abuse that happened in Arizona in evaluating the evidence in this case about what he was doing and what he was intending to do. Fiona told you that there were instances where she could hear the victim screaming while he's being struck in the garage in Arizona. She told you that there was one incident where he grabbed the child by the neck and lifted his feet off the ground, and Fiona was worried that he might accidentally kill her brother. And Ronan told you about those incidents too. And the reason, although he's not charged for those incidents here, the reason they matter here in your evaluation of the evidence is because that threat of violence, the fact that the defendant's anger and aggression and grabbing him by the neck like he does in the video, of shuffling his arm, of getting up in his face, is not posturing. That threat of violence is very real and significant for Ronan. And you can see that in the videos. You can see him cower. You can see him stand almost withdrawn. But it influences what the defendant is trying to impose on him with those threats, and also Ronan's understanding of what can happen if he disobeys. So let's talk for a second about the defense case. They put on some witnesses, and for the most part, the first day, witnesses were the defendant's friends, with the exception of the teacher. Those friends do not know and never were in Florida. They do not know what was happening when the defendant was alone in a home with his son, and they do not know the type of punishment that he was subjected to. And absolutely none of them have any firsthand knowledge of what happened in Florida because they never came in Florida, they never saw anything, and they do not know. The defense also put on a number of videos that we spent the better part of yesterday afternoon watching, which are times where Ronan was outside the house. And what we see from those videos that we saw yesterday is that for the vast majority of the time in the recording, that the victim is able to conduct himself in a family environment. He plays nicely with his little brother, Pierce, who seems to very much love him and want to play with him and is following him around and trying to get him to interact. He is able to behave appropriately with his other siblings. You see him playing with the dog. We do not see violence or aggression. You know, there's been kind of this idea floated that we had to keep the family safe. There is no evidence of that. The evidence is to the contrary. The person that was jeopardizing the safety of the Ferreter family was Tim Ferreter. We see that there are periods that he wasn't confined. And we agree with that. Ronan told you about that. When we look at the videos, we showed you, we saw some videos of him on a scooter, which is on January 7th, 2022, after school. You can see in the videos that the state published that that's the outfit that he puts on. He leaves for school, comes back, he plays on the scooter. And then at 5:42 p.m., he's locked in the cell. And he eats dinner in there alone. And he's in there until he goes to sleep in the room where he cannot leave to get a glass of water or to get a bathroom. On January 9th, this is a Sunday, 8:45 a.m., the state's evidence is he's let out from the room. Then, like he told you, he was often, when he was outside of the room, having to do yard work. We see him in the defense exhibit moving those mulch. And you see in the defense exhibit, I took a close screenshot, but if you look over, the defendant and his wife are sitting at the table while the child's working. And then later that same day, there's those videos. Like he told you, one of the things that he had to do was to clean up all the rocks. And the state put into evidence video after video of him out there by himself, by hand, taking up the shelves. You see the defendant come take a look and come back and say, every single rock. So yes, he did get out of the house, and sometimes he got to go on a scooter. Sometimes he had to do yard work, but at 6:25 every single night or earlier, he's locked in that room. The fact that on one day he watched a football game with his dad does not vitiate all the other days of systemic abuse. And then we have the testimony of Dr. Rappa. Dr. Rappa is their expert, a psychologist, and she told you that the way they chose to manage was probably the worst way that any person could manage these types of behaviors. She told you that the defendant's actions are the complete opposite of what anyone should have done with a child that has one of these conditions. She told you that there is a likelihood of psychological harm, even in children that had no underlying behavioral issues, that this is going to be harmful to anyone, but especially someone like Ronan. She talked about PTSD and reactive attachment disorder, and she told you that the defendant's actions would exacerbate the symptoms, that what he did made it worse. Actual harm. That is the defendant's own evidence. She says that this is not the recommendation that they received from any treatment provider, that she went through the records, and that what was recommended was medicine and therapy, and that there was very little of that done. And the last time that they dealt with any mental health professional for their son, who, according to the defense, they're so concerned about his behavior, was in 2019. The time frame that we are talking about is December of 2021 to January of 2022, 2 years later. No efforts. And we can see, and it's in evidence, you can take a look, when he is enrolled in school at the Palm Beach County School District at Independence Middle School in January of 2022, you fill out enrollment paperwork. And there, Tracy Ferreter says, normal dental, normal skin, normal eyes. Any concerns about general health? No. Any other specific illnesses or social or emotional or behavior problems? No. At no point did they try to get an IEP, an individual educational plan. At no point after 2019.
Action, facts not in evidence as to the IEP.
Overruled.
We heard that, you know, there was one email sent to someone about transcendental meditation, 2022. You know what else happened in 2019? Instead of doing anything productive to deal with the trauma maybe experienced by their sons or their behavioral issues, they locked him in the garage. Their biological son Pierce was born. They needed the bedroom. Ronan went into the garage. 2019 is when they stopped with the mental health professionals, and 2019 when that is happening. Those actions what the defendant is taking is not reasonable punishment meant to correct something. It is malice. It is willful torture. It is intentional caging of a child. Now, Dr. Rappo, there was a discussion about what started the PTSD. Was it the defendant's abusive actions, or was it just his childhood neglect? And you got an instruction about how you can evaluate a witness's testimony. That instruction is that you get to use your common sense in deciding what is the best evidence. You get to decide what should be relied upon in considering your verdict. You may find some of the evidence reliable and some not. So you can say that some of what Dr. Arapa said makes sense to me and I think is appropriate in light of the totality of the circumstances. And some of it doesn't really line up. But our experts agree. Unequivocally, the defendant's actions were harmful. They should never have occurred, and they would have led to worse behavior for the victim. That there was absolutely no benefit to what they did. Instead, they were harmful. In a criminal case, the state's burden is proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And the law instructs us on what a reasonable doubt is. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible doubt, a speculative or imaginary doubt. Such a doubt must not influence you to return a verdict of not guilty. And so what does that mean? If you're back there in the jury room and you find yourself speculating, well, this is what they could have meant. And it's not based on evidence, it's speculation. The law is that you have to stop. If you find yourself forcing a doubt or imagining a doubt, the law is you have to stop. A verdict of not guilty can only be based on a doubt that is reasonable. And when we look at the totality of the evidence in this case, there are no reasonable doubts left. Now, one of the instructions that Judge Coach just gave you is what the lawyers say is not evidence, and you should not consider it as such. The exhibits, the testimony, the video recordings, that is evidence. What I say and what the defense says is not evidence. You get to use your common sense. Every single day in courtrooms around the country, we convene ordinary people and we ask them to use their common sense about what is reasonable and about what is appropriate and what evidence is proof beyond a reasonable doubt. For about 6 weeks, Ronan Ferreter was locked in a room in Jupiter, Florida. And yeah, he got to go to school, and sometimes he got to go on a scooter, and sometimes he got to play with the dog. But as you heard from Dr. Meyer, that doesn't change the impact of this type of treatment has on any child, but absolutely on a child like Ronan. The defendant's intentional, repeated acts caused harm. Any person would know, any reasonable parent would know, that this is not acceptable. Any reasonable parent or person would know that this is going to harm. And despite that, over and over and over again, Tim Ferreter made that intentional, deliberate decision to treat his son like this. That's actual malice. That's intentional torture. That is willful caging. It's aggravated child abuse. It's child neglect, and it's certainly false imprisonment. It's not just one thing or one moment. It is all the things over and over and over again. What the defendant did was a crime, and that's why we're here today. Like Ronan told you, it was dehumanizing, and it was traumatic, and it should never have been done. Based on all of the evidence, that is why we are asking you, all of that evidence, those hours of tedious videos, and I know it was tedious to watch them, but the reason that we did is to see just a moment of what that tedious life was like for Ronan here. Based on all the evidence and based on the laws of the state of Florida, we're asking you for the only verdict that is supported by the evidence and supported by the law. And that is a verdict of guilty. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a short 10-minute break before we proceed with the defense closing. All right, everyone may be seated. Court will be in recess until 3:10.
There's more to come.
Kid in a Cage. Florida versus Timothy Ferreter from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Press subscribe now.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.